All these hellos. There's only so many hellos to ways to say hello. Hello. Yeah, you try some.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Hello.
How do you say hello at the office?
Konnichiwa. My office is in Japan. And then sometimes I, for fun, I say tschüss.
Tschüss. Do you ever say bonjour now?
Sometimes, yeah. If it's a particularly sad morning, I'll roll up and I might say, bonjour now, monsieur, mon frère, eh? Any friends? That sort of thing. But
looks like someone's got a case of the Mondays.
Yeah, looks like someone needs someone to talk to. Looks like someone just wants to be around other people, but there's never anyone there. Hybrid office working environment, isn't it?
Who's the someone? Is it are you the
it's
someone?
It's me, yeah. I'm just looking for fulfillment. I'm looking to combust around people with people. I want to create a chemical reaction. Do you know what I mean? I'm tired of my own chemical reactions. I want to make a compound with you.
So, like, rub up against someone until you spill your beans. That's
yeah, you know what I'm saying? Two parts oxygen, one part carbon, three parts ennui.
But what if the person you're talking to is, like, dead space and wants to, like, say, oh, did you see anything good at Netflix?
What, dark matter?
Yeah, what compound are you making? Aren't you opening yourself up to a series of black holes, conversationally speaking?
You might accidentally create Rhydon, or whatever that one's called. Raygon? What's it called? What's the R element? The R element on the element periodic table. Hold on, I'm just getting it up now. Where's it gone?
Talk about creating a compound. You've created a compound now just talking to me about hello. The simple notion of how we say hello in the morning and...
Rhodium!
Isn't that what American cowboys do?
Rodeo. There you go. You get a man. Oh, there's a ring of the doorbell. You get a man, you get a bull, you get some friction, groin and back friction, actually, in a rodeo.
What a scientist does when he's riding on a bull?
Rhodium.
Rhodium.
The 45th element of the periodic table, sir. Yes. This is good, though. We could probably make some more of these. Hold on. What do you call it when Wes Anderson makes a film set in India where lots of the characters are confused? Indium. Yeah? What do you call it when you get me watching a Wes Anderson film that I don't like that much? What is the relationship of the film to me? Krypton.
Yeah, but you're not Superman, so...
In a film watching sense, in my own environment where I'm the only conscious being, I think I am
also
Superman.
Also, don't tip your hand this early about, you know, whether you like the film or not.
What do you call a fantasy hero who is also known as Strider, but when he... What do you call Viggo Mortensen when he takes a chemistry class? Argon. Yeah? Did you get it?
Yeah, no, yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's a good one. Okay, what do you call a Californian Keanu Reeves type who you keep in your pocket?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't know. What is it?
Bro mine.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. What do you call it when I am so hungry for a movie that I want to eat it, but halfway through eating it, I've realised something?
I don't know, actually.
Iodine.
Oh, I like that.
That's not good. Let's be honest, no. Some of these have really not been good.
That's good, that one. Okay, here's one. What do you call a person who likes to draw Japanese comics onto his legs.
Oh, hang on.
It's manganese.
Manganese, yeah.
That's a good one.
Manganese. Oh,
manganese.
Yeah. No, I think that's that is quite a good one, yeah.
One more.
One more.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast, the show in which we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. Joining me, as ever, is a slightly poorly, real trooper of an old boy. He's still got a leaky bucket for a head, though. It's Mr. Joe Devine.
But the good news is that the leaky element of me is now just contained to my head.
Yeah, you're no longer... How's your bum? Is your bum okay? Did they fix your bum?
Well, as I said last time, it wasn't really anything to do with my bum. Although everything is to do with your bum in one way, one sense or another. But yeah, I'm out, man. I had a cholecystectomy, which is the surgical name for when they yeet your gallbladder out of your body. Turns out you don't need it, and mine was fucked, so they got rid of it, and now I'm just soldiering on, you know?
Yeah, you've lost all your gall.
That's right, I'm gallless. And now here I am, I'm coming back. Like, this is my Rubicon, you know? I am Caesar, and I'm returning to Rome with an army of... Also, with an army of, I think, COVID virus cells. So it's a double whammy today.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who you are without gall, because so much of your, like, cinematic chat shit is... It's 80% gall.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're sans gall.
Well, and I'm sans stones as well, because that was the problem, is my gall was full of stones. That's where I kept my stones. Now I'm stonesless, and I'm gallless, and all I've, you know...
Yeah, so it's, different kind of vibes for the show. Hopefully it's a good one.
Write in if you haven't got a gall, you know? If you're also sans gall, write in, let me know. How'd you get on? What's your what was your diet adjustment like? Did you even have one? Did you have any weird experiences? Do you feel any shame about not having a gall? Do you think it's changed your personality? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't changed yours. You're still managed to just rattle off a long sentence without pausing for breath.
But I feel ill at the end of it, you know? It feels different to me.
It's so hard because I felt so sorry for you for the past 2 weeks. And as soon as we've just pressed record, I have no feelings to you whatsoever. I feel like nothing but like I want to crush you and make fun of you.
Yeah, no, please do. I want that as well.
So often someone says to me, "You're really horrible to him on that program.
Yeah.
And I say, yeah, I think he likes it, though.
I do.
I'm going to do this now. If you're enjoying the show, give us 5 stars. Always 5 stars on the iTunes. Leave a little review.
Don't give us 4. Fuck off if you give us 4.
Well, that's pointless, yeah. You know,
this is 5, mean, man. Come
mean.
On.
Mean. Don't be like the guy who left the first review saying, "I like Joe, but this Adam guy is a real piece of work. He really, really grinds my gears."
Oh, you've shown that guy, though. You've really shown that guy.
Well, that is the thrust of what he said. He said, "I can't listen to it because of him."
That's the thrust, for sure. Yeah.
That was the thrust of it.
And in a sense, you haven't shown him because he stopped listening because of you. But you've shown the other people that have heard about that review that that guy... was A, and these are both, you know, his two things. These are both positive things, yeah. A, that guy was wrong. Or B, that guy was right, and now he's so wrong, you know?
I mean, I think I'm the same. So his opinion, I've got opinions, and they're right. So his opinion of me must have also been right.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's fine, you know, we all have thoughts about things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I thought?
What did you think?
But we're coming up to 2 years of the podcast.
Yeah.
And I thought it could be fun for us to do a kind of fun, special, extra little mini episodes, mm-hmm. where, and they would be called The Movies You Forgot Podcast, You Forgot Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So it's basically us going back to the episodes of the podcast that we forgot we did, and we re-listen to them, and then we talk about what we chatted about.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know what I mean? The Movies You Forgot Podcast, Podcast.
The Movies You Forgot, You Forgot.
Podcast.
Well, you don't, I mean, podcast is implied, right?
The Movies You Forgot, You Forgot, You Forgot, You Forgot. Two podcasts. Anyway, I don't know, something to bank, because I
that's,
think it could be
that's
pretty...
That's one to bank, yeah. Do you, how sort of, you know, how kind of secure are you feeling?
I know you're going to say it's a shit idea.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I just before I say anything, I just wanted to know about your general level of, your general feeling of security.
Well, I've splayed myself out in front of you. Yeah. How often do I do that?
Not that often, which is why I'm asking. Right. So you must feel some sense of security in order to do that. Out of five, if you were to give this a five-star review, how many stars would you give if it was just about your level of feeling of security?
Oh, five. I mean, that's six over, yeah. Like, plus.
So you're solid. I can't. You can't. You're unshakable. I can't shake you.
Yeah, so go and shake me.
No, I think it's a good idea. I think it sounds like the kind of idea that two people would come up with to fob off some Patreon listeners in about 3 years' time. Do you know what I mean? Like the people that will pay, who don't, you know, where it's clear that they just like listening to us. They don't really care about the content. And we don't care about it either, but there's a sort of mutually beneficial relationship there where they can give us money and we can give them some escape from the horror that is the inside of their own heads. Do you know what I mean? That sense of familiarity where the trappings really are just as wafer thin as the level of substance in the more recent Wes Anderson films. I think that's
stop.
What...
Stop using
no,
everything
not,
you say to kind of shiv Wes Anderson.
No, I'm not shivving. I'm just saying,
even on my Letterboxd chats with, it's still in the same film review comment section,
yeah.
with listener Lloyd and right. Listener Dara Nolan, even them, one of them said, thanks for having the break, I really need it. So it's like, oh yeah, he was glad of not having an episode to listen to.
That's the thing, because sometimes you can have such an outsized impact on people that they need you to stop. I've had that before. I've got friendships on a pause because of that, those sorts of things.
Really?
Know? No, not I, really. I, mean, I just thought it'd be funny if I had.
I've always. Yeah, no, I've definitely had people stop talking to me, and I don't think it's because I've had an outsized impact. I think it's because people have tired of me and
right.
don't want to be my friend anymore.
Right.
And again, that's all fine. You know, I'm a Wes Anderson movie. Maybe I was fondly remembered in the past, and then people got sick of my
shit.
Yeah,
man, people met you in their 20s and they were like, this guy is style. Yeah, he's got long hair. He looks like Viggo Mortensen if he was a heroin addict. He's got these cool tattoos that he says don't mean anything. You know, who does that? Only cool people do that. And he's got these outrageous, wild opinions that he doesn't really seem to believe, but he shouts about them so passionately that I'm enraptured. And then when they get to 35, they go... Oh, I'm tired of this. Where's the substance? Where's the level beneath the inflated sense of self? You know, where's the real argument? What does this guy actually think? What does he actually mean or feel? Does he think, mean or feel anything? Or is this just, you know, why is he always so symmetrical? You know, he's become a parody of himself. And actually, there were, I go back and I think about conversations we used to have when we were younger, and I think, oh, there really was substance in there. Was it just my youthful perspective? Or was, no, there was something there, right? Whereas now, you're just a parody of yourself. And even though you're a success at the box office, yeah, it's not real, is it? It's not true.
I mean, if by success at the box office means I had kids, is that boffo box office?
I think so. Yeah, you've lucked out. Your wife's an old-timer, you know.
An old-time fucking pain in the neck. On today's episode, we are doing the 2007 Wes Anderson flick, The Darjeeling Limited.
You went hard on the J there, didn't you? Which I think, I'm not saying is wrong, I think that's probably right. I always go, my instinct is to not completely abandon the J like the Spanish, but to soften the J like the Dutch. And I don't know why I'd be doing that, because is Darjeeling, is it a Hindu word? I don't know the origin of the train. Maybe it's not. But I would always feel like saying Darjeeling, almost Darjeeling. The kind of ZJ. That's what I would say. But then I think that's probably wrong. Whereas you just went Darjeeling, you properly went for the J like an English butcher.
Yeah, because I think of it as a tea, like Darjeeling tea. Not right. That I'd ever drink Darjeeling tea.
Right. It's a city. Darjeeling is a city in India. It comes from the Tibetan words of Dorje or Dorje, meaning thunderbolt, and Ling, a place or land. So thunderbolt land. Let's see if there is a pronunciation.
Darjeeling. 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 Darjeeling.
So you want to know how to pronounce Darjeeling? Well, there I just said it. Darjeeling. You want me to go a little slowly? It's Darjeeling. Now you don't have any excuse not to ask for this wonderful tea. There I just said it. Darjeeling. There I just said it. Darjeeling. There I just said it. Darjeeling.
What's really nice about this film is no one says, all aboard the Darjeeling Limited.
That's true.
Tickets for the Darjeeling Limited. We must get to the Darjeeling Limited. Come on, guys. Let's hurry to the Darjeeling Limited. Oh, we've got thrown off the Darjeeling Limited. Never happens. Yeah? The name of the film.
You put Matthew Berry there, didn't you? The Darjeeling Limited. Yeah. Maybe he was in it and he did say that, but it got cut because instead they were late for the train, weren't they? So whoever did say that on the platform, they wouldn't have made it in the film because the train was already going by the time that Adrian Brody was running onto it, you know?
Yeah, that's a very deep visual reference for people who haven't seen. They're not going to get...
No.
The film begins with Bill Murray running for a train.
Oh, you haven't read the Letterboxd?
No, I haven't, but...
Right.
You made a joke and
that's right. I interrupted you. Yeah, that's my
No, it's more that you always try and explain stuff to the audience. So then I thought it'd be fun if I explained your joke to the audience because it was about the film. I'm going to continue to explain it. Joe was making a joke about the beginning of the Darjeeling Limited where Bill Murray is running. He's in a taxi and he thinks people are chasing him. And there's a little... Wes is having a little bit of fun here.
Does he?
He's having a little bit of fun here because Billy Murray is known, he's since Rushmore, main star of Rushmore, well, second Rushmore, big feature in Tenenbaums, the main star of Aquatic, The Life Of. And then he's beginning the film with all this kind of this action thing. It's quite a Hitchcockian vibe. And Billy Murray is going to run. He's running for the Darjeeling Limited train. It's setting off. And then, of course, the kinks kick in. Bill Murray misses the train and Adrian Brody runs past. Slow-mo, kinks, kaboom. We're in a different... He's teased
great.
A different vibe and then it is a really good opening to a movie.
It's the best bit about the film.
Look, stop giving away your feelings of the film.
Listen, you wait. You'll get my feelings. You're going to get them. You haven't got them yet.
To the Letterboxd, this is Wes Anderson. This is Wesley Anderson's fourth film. Mm-hmm. He'd hit with Bottle Rocket, and then Rushmore, then Tenenbaums. Mm-hmm. And it was his fifth. Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, Tenenbaums, Life Aquatic, then The Darjeeling. It's his fifth flick, mid. So this is
the end of what people consider to be like the early Wes trilogy, right? A lot of people consider they consider Bottle Rocket the debut off on its own. Rushmore is this kind of standalone, and then these three films, Tenenbaums, A Life Aquatic and Darjeeling Limited, it's a sort of weird kind of trilogy of Wes.
Do they?
They do. That's how fans talk about it, yeah. Which I understand, because I think if you were to try to era him this is an era.
Again, I'm going to show my hand because I rewatched all the early Wes's.
I thought you were going to do the Letterboxd.
Okay, fine. Fuck me.
Don't show your hand. I want that hand, but I want it right in my face as just as soon as I've heard what this film's about.
God, Adam's the host. Adam's the host.
Yeah, I've got COVID.
Right? Okay, this is a wonderfully snappy 92 mins. Although the time is snappy, I think there's a drag. There's a drag, even there's a bit of drag around the 60 to 70 min mark.
Just after that scene you were talking about at the beginning until the end of the film.
Oh, fuck me. Right, yeah. Letterboxd. Here's a bit in caps. I want us to be brothers again, like we used to be. That's a line of dialogue that Owen Wilson's character...
I want us to be brothers again, like we used to be.
Nice. I like it.
I mean, it's not... It's sort of... Do you know what it is? It's close enough to not be funny, but it's far enough away to not be good. It's like... It's plum shit, that is.
No, that's plum perfect.
Okay.
You know, you can't go on the stage with it. But if you're at a dinner party and you go,
I'm not whipping that out at a dinner party.
If you do, everyone's going to go.
Pass the salt, please. I just love having salt.
Yeah, like, why would you do it around salt?
I don't know.
You've got to make it contextual.
Well, my brother Luke, he's more attractive and better.
No, you've okay. Yeah, you're right. It is shit.
Yeah, it gets worse the more I do. I shouldn't have carried on. What's the letterbox?
Three American brothers who have not spoken to each other in a year set off on a train voyage across India with a plan to find themselves and bond with each other, to become brothers again, like they used to be. Their spiritual quest, in quote marks, however, veers rapidly off course due to events involving over-the-counter painkillers, Indian cough syrup, and pepper spray. I don't like that letterboxed.
Well, no, it's... But then, to be fair, it is hard to write a synopsis for a film that doesn't really... where nothing happens.
No, plenty happens here.
What would you say it is then?
Well, everything else up, ignoring the spiritual quest, veers rapidly off course. It does veer rapidly off course. I just don't. Letterboxd has got this thing in brackets, and I know Letterboxd has pulled this from somewhere else. But this is my point of reference. Their spiritual quest veers rapidly off course due to the fact that the brothers bicker, and also it doesn't explain why they're on the train voyage. They haven't seen each other in a year because they their father died and there was a big to-do at the funeral and the mum never turned up.
The synopsis that's in front of me on IMDb, okay, is one line. I'm going to read it to you now. A year after their father's funeral, three brothers travel across India by train in an attempt to bond with each other.
Brilliant.
That's good, right?
But I won't use IMDb. No, I want us to be sponsored by Letterboxd.
Right,
yeah. I'm committing to the bit. We basically are. So
what we should do is we should court a sponsorship by repeatedly saying that the blurbs that they pull from wherever they're getting them are just not... They're just not as good as the ones on IMDb, are they? They're much worse. And actually, just as a service generally, the main game we play in here, the box office game... We do that from IMDb. And if anything, you know, IMDb is it's the real spiritual home of this show, as opposed to Letterboxd, which is a, you know, it's just a thing that you use to talk to Dara Nolan.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, so the brothers are played by, the older brother is played by Owen Wilson, Francis.
Yeah.
The middle brother is played by Adrian Brody. Mm-hmm. Peter, he's called Peter.
Yeah.
He is phenomenal in this movie.
Yes.
Jason Schwartzman plays Jack.
I'll be referring to them as their actor names today, by the way.
Of course. Yeah, yep. No, it's Owen, Adrian and Jason.
Yeah.
So who got who on this?
I got you on this. I got you on this one.
I've wanted you to get me on this,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Anything after Rushmore, I never rewatched any of it.
Right.
Rushmore came out. That was big. Everyone loved it. I was the right age. Went back to watch Bottle Rocket, which I kind of liked.
Sure.
And then after that, Tenenbaums I didn't really click with. I think it was a bit out of my reach. Mm-hmm. It's all about... Even though it's about dads, I should have been eating that up.
Maybe that's why. Maybe you weren't ready to reckon with it.
Yeah, maybe. And then Life Aquatic, I really didn't like. I found it very boring. I'll talk about my rewatch later. And then this came along and it felt like nice... little like straight bat, solid film. I think I quite enjoyed it and then forgot about it.
Yeah.
And then it was a pleasant surprise to rewatch this. I found it very agreeable. The interplay between Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody and Jason Schwartzman as brothers.
Yeah.
The bickering, the script between them, their relationship is wonderful. If I think people accused it of, I don't know, like being touristy around India, like Eat, Pray, Love type stuff, although Eat, Pray, Love hadn't come out. But it's satirical of people who do that. You know, it makes fun of them going on this spiritual quest.
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, reading the instructions for the spiritual awakening ceremonies off of a laminated agenda card that was printed out by one of the brothers' assistants.
And they're all dealing with grief. It looks great. The stuff that bugged me first time around, there's a big moment, dramatic moment that happens halfway through that I thought was a bit much, to do with some little Indian kids. Didn't bug me. I actually thought it worked and it made sense. And then I think it's only towards the end when they're going to meet their mum, who is ostensibly been absent from their life and didn't come to their father's funeral. They're journeying to see her, and the film kind of loses a bit of pace and urgency around that point. But then it kind of wraps up nicely and they all have a nice little character. They've all come, it's been a journey, mm-hmm. and they've moved on. They literally drop their baggage. They run sure. for, the yeah. film ends as it begins, not just one brother, three brothers running to a train, and they're carrying their dad's bags that they've inherited, and they're all dropping their dad's bags.
Yes.
They're literally dropping the bags of daddy.
Yeah, they are literally okay? doing that, yeah.
And they're also doing that spiritually.
Yeah,
you, the
and they're
viewer,
doing it in slow motion. And it basically says on the film in a big text over the top of it, they're dropping their dad's bags. And then there's a director's bit where Wes Anderson shows up and you can hear him talking, saying, I don't know if you've got it, by the way, but they're dropping their dad's bags. Have you picked up on the special that they're doing that?
Yeah, but you see, film is a visual medium.
Yeah.
And even though that is as on the nose as you could imagine,
yeah.
it ties back to the beginning.
Sure.
It looks great.
Yeah.
And you go away thinking, I know what journey I've been on.
Yeah.
And I wanted... And I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that. So, you know, you did. Now,
yeah.
wait a sec.
Do you know what that reminded
me
of?
I'm just going to get my second can, and then you tell me what
second
it reminded
can.
You
of. Second can? We've only just read the letterbox now.
We're on halfway through the episode.
This is your last can.
Yes, last one. I tell you what, if we could be sponsored by a fucking beer brand, mate, we would clean
would
up.
Bad.
We would absolutely clean up.
No, because
brought
when
to you
when you
by Clueless Campo.
When you inevitably quit drinking and enter recovery, we're going to have to abandon the lucrative beer sponsor that we've got, and it will monetarily affect me. You know, so I don't think it's good. I don't think it would be good for us.
No, they all do low to non-alcoholic ones anyway now.
That's true.
And I'll make that part of the story. It's like, yeah. Oh, if you've fallen off the wagon, or if you are on the wagon, try this, you know, make it fun.
Yeah, make it fun.
Make it fun. I don't think, you know, the only thing that has made near alcoholism fun
yeah.
is the film Another Round.
Right.
It's
right.
the only thing
sure.
in culture that gets close
yeah.
to getting the fun and the sadness of
right,
drink.
Right, 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 right.
And that's what I want to do when we get picked up and dropped by an alcohol sponsor.
For sure. No, for sure. Hey, do you know what I think about that? What it reminded me of? It reminded me of that excellent Stuart Lee joke where I think it's Carpet Remnant World. Is it Carpet Remnant World? Maybe. He said, yeah, it doesn't matter, does it? He says, he's doing a bit at the beginning where he says, you know, I can see that the audience is a bit bigger than usual. People have brought their friends, don't like it when new people come. You know, it's very funny. And then he uses that as an opportunity to explain his show and how it works to people. And he says, basically, you know, I'll do a joke now. I'm going to say something now. And then I'm going to do some jokes, and then at the end, I'll say something which will be the same as the thing that I said at the beginning, and it will create the illusion of structure within the show. And whenever I watch a film like this one, where it starts with running for a train and it ends with running for a train, all I think of is Stuart Lee talking about the illusion of structure. And I sit down and I think, what actually is the structure here other than... I'm not that keen to dive deeply into it right now.
Oh, that's a rhetorical question.
It's a rhetorical put down.
Yeah.
But I think Wes Anderson in some films, not necessarily this one, and other directors, other storytellers, this is certainly not something that's limited to film, are guilty of doing the thing that the book says where, you know, you make the ending the same as the beginning and then it's sort of like, it feels like you've come full circle in some way, when actually I really don't think they have. And that, for me personally, the great disappointment about this film, great disappointment, is that there are so many themes in it that I would really want to personally connect with and that I think are really interesting to me as a viewer.
Dead dad?
There's dead dad. There's like family stuff. I think family stuff's always really interesting. There's the connection with siblings. I've got a sister, you know, like we have a interesting relationship. So like the dynamic between these brothers is really interesting to me. And I always think sibling stuff is great because these sibling relationships are very intense. You've got a brother and a sister, you know this, right? So whenever I see that reflected in films, I'm always interested in it. And these are characters going through, you know, they're all going through grief as well. And that's something that I'm interested in watching characters go through, right? So a lot of what the film purports to be about, I am interested in.
Where's the disconnect happen?
Because it doesn't explore anything. It doesn't do any of those things. It promises to do them all. The conceit is wonderful. Like it sets up something that this film should be perfect for me. For all of that, it ticks all of those boxes, and guess what? It's shit. It's shallow. It doesn't explore anything. It just purports to constantly. It sets up loads of interesting questions. It doesn't attempt to answer any of them. It's not just boring. It's frustrating for me to watch because I want this film. I want the film that's promised to me, and what I get is a bunch of people doing very well crafted comic performances. Pretending to investigate themes that are of interest to me, whereas really they're just making lightly humorous comments about things. That's all that's happening. It's like you know, hanging about with people where everyone's pretending to have a really in-depth conversation, but in reality, no one's saying anything. Like, it's so annoying.
I think I get why you that's how you saw it like that.
Yeah.
What I saw was, I don't necessarily think it's not really digging in to grief in any meaningful way. And for me, that's perfect because I have no experience of grief. And so I can see why it winds you up like that. What I see is what he's doing is it's just about characters bouncing off each other. And they kind of, they have these little mini realizations about how they're viewed by other people. And they're very, it's a very minor film and it's a very minor, these are minor things. So Owen Wilson realizes, I'm a bit controlling and I need to stop being controlling. Jason Schwartzman needs to, I don't know what he needs to realize doing.
Stop running away and trying to have sex with other random women.
Well, he needs to own up and about his fiction isn't fiction. He just writes about his life.
Yeah.
And Adrian Brody, I mean, he needs to, his wife's about to give birth. His character gets off unbelievably lightly. His realization is that he needs to get home and be a father.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the idea that I could have abandoned my wife at 7 months pregnant, Eight months pregnant. He thinks she's 7 months pregnant, and then thought that I could somehow re-enter that relationship as if nothing had happened. That's what's insane to me.
Sure,
that's the fantasy of that film.
Almost as though all the characters are extremely two-dimensional, and the film is about characters. The sad thing is that there aren't any characters.
But because you've got such three winning actors and the relationship between the brothers is so compelling, 2D plus 2D plus 2D.
Right, yeah.
That creates 6D.
Yeah.
It creates the illusion of six dimensions.
Yeah. Right. But it is an illusion. That's what I'm saying. I completely agree with you. And I think the performances here, I think Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody, Jason Schwartzman, I think Amara Karan, who I don't know if I've ever
great.
Seen in anything else. She plays Rita, who's like one of the train attendees who's kind of attending to these men on the train. I think she's terrific. I love Angelica Houston and everything. I think she plays it really well. You mentioned already there's a kind of weird mid part of the film where something happens, and Irfan Khan is in that as well. He basically doesn't speak, and I think he's terrific in it. So it's not a jibe about the characters. I've got other things to say, the more positive things about the way that the film looks. I think it has a really nice aesthetic. Where Wes Anderson clearly doesn't have enough money yet to do the things he wants to do. So he's like, he's either compromising or he just hasn't kind of completed his arc yet. And at this point, halfway up, the way that he decides to shoot things are really interesting. And I like that about it. I think it's fun. And but it is an illusion. That's the problem. You have terrific actors who make you perhaps believe that there's some substance to this film, right? There is no substance to this film. It's just pretending. It's little bells. They're hitting little bells, yeah? Why do the bells make that sound? Because they're hollow.
Bing. Here's a hot take that I don't want you to engage in.
Yeah.
Hot take, this comes out a year before Slumdog Millionaire. He pre-Slumdog Millionaired India before Slumdog Millionaire. He shoots India with so much humanity and realism, and like they really went there. He was really inspired by all of that. Which that side of it, you start to think that's the kind of Western, oh let's do India thing. But again, as a Western man, I didn't mind that. Second point: what does it matter if it is an illusion? If people are watching.
Yeah.
For you, it is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for me, second time round watching it,
yeah.
I'm not viewing it in that way, and I don't necessarily care about that.
Yeah,
anyone else watching that movie? This will tee perfectly onto the key criticism of Wes Anderson, in that he is all style and no substance.
Yeah.
And that's the...
I shirk that simply because it's so easy to say, and I know people who would say that. Where I go, you don't know what you're fucking talking about, right? So, like, I shirk it a little bit because I'm worried that that's such a kind of cliche about Wes Anderson that it must be too oversimplified. But in the case of Darjeeling Limited, it is style over substance, 100%. I'm comfortable saying that.
Someone said, and one of the things I read, they said, Quentin Tarantino, he's a storyteller. Wes Anderson is a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate reaction was, what? Also, fuck off. What are you talking about? No, he's not. He's a director.
Sure, yeah. Also, all these things are the same, right? I mean, what that person means is, he makes things what look good, yeah?
But Quentin Tarantino makes things that look gorgeous.
Sure. I agree.
If anything, I'd say they're both the same side of the same coin.
I think they are. I think that they're both very successful filmmakers who've managed to make careers out of accidentally stumbling upon substance in earlier film. No, that's too mean. About being able to carve a little niche out for themselves in a very crowded marketplace, aka Hollywood cinema. Yeah, they're both people who are associated with their specific craft, but talented filmmakers whose knowledge of film is probably encyclopedic, and they probably have, you know, varying degrees of obsession in terms of the actual act of making film, which has to be praised in the case of Wes Anderson specifically. I mean, the lengths that he must go to in order to either, you know, create the image he wants to see, recreate the image he sees in his head, that they are very admirable. And I've never met Wes Anderson, and I don't know what he says about his films, right? So the idea that they're somehow lying to me is just a creation of my own imagination. But it feels as though they are presented to have a meaning that they don't have. That's not true of all of them, right? And I want to make that point. We don't have to go on to talk about that now if you're taking us somewhere else as the host, but...
No, I think that's interesting.
Because like, you are the host.
I am. But just maybe all he has to say is on screen. And the same with Quentin Tarantino. I've been so... I loved Quentin Tarantino. When I was 18, when I saw Reservoir Dogs, that blew my mind.
Yeah.
You know, that was a film that... One of those, the touchstone movies... Or like you got a book, you got a band, you got a movie. You know,
he was your bright eyes.
He was my guy. Yeah. I thought this is it. This is what film can be.
Yeah.
You know, it was profane. It was violent.
Yeah.
It was telling stories in a different order.
Yeah.
So I, after Jackie Brown, you know, Reservoir Dogs. Pulp Fiction.
Where was I? Let me. So
now, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and Jackie Brown. That's Mark One, Quentin Tarantino.
So that's like your trilogy. Is that your the same?
That's
as this
your trilogy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then after Jackie Brown was very coolly received.
Yeah.
He changed tack, seemingly. So I slowly fell out of love with Quentin Tarantino, and then at a certain point, I started to get quite angry and annoyed by his films and the things he would make. And I'm only come to realise recently that the main focus of my anger isn't the films necessarily, it's the narrative around him as a filmmaker and what he represents.
That's what captured your ire.
Yeah, and I got confused. And the only reason I figured that out was because I think it was a couple of weeks ago, when this comes out, it'll be a month ago, he did a podcast. And he'd said in the podcast... Quentin Tarantino was on a podcast, and he'd said in the podcast, I won't watch Toy Story 4 because the 1, 2 and 3, that's a perfect trilogy. Now, the story then that was reported in all the film outlets, and they all report this as if news that they've just like found themselves.
Yeah.
The headline was, Tarantino refuses to watch Toy Story 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not... you see that headline.
Great headline.
But that's not really reflected. That doesn't reflect now, actually said.
Speaking as all I would say is I can imagine the conversation in the office. Like, well, that is technically true.
It is technically true.
Yeah.
But
and therefore,
also,
that's the news.
That's all news now is people listening to podcasts and quoting what people say. And that's the headline.
And saying that's technically true.
Yeah. And it's always said, and it shouldn't be said like Tarantino says.
Yeah.
It should be. Tarantino mused in amongst other things he said in an hour-long podcast.
It should be.
That's what the news is these days, and it's fucking bullshit.
We're all part of the filthy sewers together, you know?
Well, so I see that headline, and my first thought was, who the fuck gives a shit what Quentin Tarantino, whether he wants to watch Toy Story 4 or not? And it was for the first time I had this...
And then you remembered that you were Adam Richman.
Yeah, I had a stark realisation where I just thought, oh, hang on a sec, I've got a podcast where I fucking moan about movies. And then I had a deeper level. I was like, oh God, of course. They've stolen this from a podcast. He's just chatting about movies. And this is what Tarantino's always done. He just talks and talks and talks. And to report any of it as news isn't his fault. It's not news. He's always saying, I'm going to make a play next. I'm going to do a film about the Vega brothers. Oh, no, I'm not. Yeah. I'm going to do Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm going to do this. And he's just a constant bullshit machine. And that's not his fault. And I got so swept up in the reporting of everything, every single bullshit thing that he said, because he's a fucking blabbermouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started to get like, you know, just like, oh, I don't stop talking and make a good movie. And I conflated these two things. And I rewatched Kill Bill 2 a couple of weeks ago. And I thought, oh, fucking hell, palate cleanser. That's quite good, that. There's so much amazing stuff in that movie. It's not perfect. Yeah. I'm going to revisit The Hateful Eight with a clear and pure heart. You know, and I'm going to stop watching these films like I need to beat Tarantino and be the only guy who doesn't like him anymore. I need to grow up. Again, I'm fucking 43 years old. And so I think I need to apply. And I think that same, I'm changed. I'm changing. That whole vibe that I brought there, I fed into my rewatches of Wes Anderson. Early Wes Anderson. Yeah, I've done it. I've done it. Anyway, I'll close the circle. I've enjoyed and also struggled watching these early Wes Anderson films. Yes. And I've not begrudged the what I considered like, I think I was holding in this thing like he's mannered. He's, you know, he keeps, you know, he's got kooky casts. He's got surface level nonsense. It's always like montages and whip pans. And yes, they all of those things are prevalent in the movies, but they're not the only thing. They make his films recognisably his, but there's enough going on in each of those films to make it like him interesting as a filmmaker, and for me to kind of forgive him and go, fine, Wes, these are all important / interesting entries into the cinematic canon.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
Wow. It's a true role reversal. Look at you go, man. You just found nuggets of gold in a river of shit. That's what I try to do normally. And you're right. I take it on board. I accept it. I've done the same thing with Wes. Here's why, okay? I hate him, right? But I don't actually hate him because I don't know him. Do you know what I hate? It's myself. It's myself. I hate myself. And Wes is, he's canon enough, right? He's not even canon adjacent. I mean, he's like, he lives in, if the canon was sort of split up into a few different campuses, different genre campuses, right? He owns the house that the other art canon directors live in, right? He's the main one that the mainstream people know who makes films that aren't completely ordinary in terms of the style and the way that they look and that have some kind of experimental element to them that aren't, that makes them not ordinary.
He's the most mainstream indie, people don't use that word anymore really, I guess. He's the most mainstream left
kind of art house,
left,
he's
not
way.
Really art house.
He's art house adjacent, right? Because a lot of the time the film, the stories like don't necessarily follow natural linear arcs, and where the things that are supposed to matter don't really matter. I know he's not art house, but you know,
they look pretty. They star Tom Hanks, you know, they've got, but yeah, he's managed to insert
stylized is that it?
Yeah, people will know, have you seen, they'll go, are you going to go and see the new Wes Anderson? And everyone's like, I don't know, maybe.
Right. And then people who only know a certain, this is what I really hate about myself, but people who only know a certain amount about films, people who I think in my head don't really like films, yeah? they feel secure because of Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson gives them a sense of security about the breadth of their film knowledge, because they know that anything beneath Wes is just nonsense that they don't have to pay attention to, right? They can tick their artistic movie box because they've got Wes, and then they can go back to watching Transformers or whatever else it is that you know, actually just watching TV because they don't actually like films.
It's such a snob. I love it that you're you're saying stuff. I'm gonna let you go, man. You're saying stuff that I think but would never say out loud.
This is the role reversal thing, right? And then I think when they talk to me, those people, I think I'm like, first I'm like, sorry, you're talking to me. Why are you even looking at me? Don't look at me. Go else, be gone elsewhere, right? And then they, not only do they talk to me, but they have the audacity. They've got the gall. I haven't got gall. They've got the gall to think that they know, but they don't know, right? And I know. I know that they don't know. They don't know that. They think we both know. I know that they don't know. But I also know that I'm not allowed to say that they don't know, because I know that they do know because of what you just said, right? That's the thing I hate about myself. And it's the reason that I stopped listening to Coldplay in my 20s, because I couldn't anymore, because everyone was like, not only did everyone like Coldplay, but also everyone didn't like Coldplay at the same time. And there I am, just trying to listen to Parachutes, because it's a great album. And I'm thinking, I can't listen to Parachutes anymore. So now I'm listening to Parachutes all the time, because it's a great album, and I'm trying not to get caught up in that. And that's the point I was going to come to with Wes.
Wes Anderson's Coldplay. I think you've landed on Wes Anderson is Coldplay.
I think he might be. I was trying to think of a slightly when more, but I think he might
your
be
best, but you can't succeed.
When you put everything symmetrically. Now, what I was going to say is,
the Gwyneth Paltrow connection is strong.
The film we've chosen to do, unfortunately for me, is one where I think a lot of those, what are now cliches and what are unfairly, like broadly attributed pejorative descriptions of Wes Anderson, I think this film is the beginning of the solidification of some of those things. I don't think the application of those pejoratives is fair across all of his films. So I didn't do as much of a rewatching session as you did. Very really great admiration for that, by the way. You did loads of those.
I've never done that before on any of these things, because I knew I was so down on him. Yeah. Just to caveat it.
Right, and so did I. But I did rewatch Rushmore, and I watched it last night, and I thought not only was it delightful, it's better than I remember it, and I really liked it when I was in my early 20s watching that. Jason Schwartzman is exceptional. I've got ideas about why I think it's such a good film, but that film does not deserve any of those pejorative claims. That film is just a brilliant film. It's full of substance, and it has style as well.
Okay, how is Rushmore full of substance, and how is Darjeeling not?
This is my big theory, okay? The big theory is Rushmore, for anyone who doesn't know what the film of Rushmore is, as we said earlier, it's Wes Anderson's second movie. Jason Schwartzman plays a high school, sort of semi-high middle school, I think he's 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman plays a 15-year-old
Max
at a private school in America, and he falls in love with one of the teachers there, and he's a strange kid, right? That's basically the story. Becomes friends with the dad of another couple of kids who is played by Bill Murray. And I think the reason it works, excuse me, blah, blah, blah. And I think the reason it works is because the film is essentially told through the eyes of a child. So the stakes are huge for him, and they're not huge for us, because we know that the things that matter to this 15-year-old don't really matter. But to the 15-year-old, these things really matter, okay? And what that does is it allows all of the quaint, fun, silly, little, light things to be quaint and fun and silly and little and light, whilst not taking out the substance of the movie. Because when I watch it, I can at once feel sorry for and understanding towards this child who sees the world in this very simplistic way, a way in which is being reflected by the filmmaking. And I can allow myself to feel the simplicity and the quaintness of it, because I am an adult watching and I know that the stakes aren't really that real. As soon as you substitute a child for adult men who share the same childlike perspective, I mean, to a really two-dimensional perspective, it doesn't work anymore.
Well, the problem is you've nailed it with Rushmore, but unfortunately the counterpoint is Moonrise Kingdom,
I haven't seen it. I was going to ask you if
total shit.
But it really resonated with audiences, didn't it? It's like one of the more successful ones, and I do wonder if that's because it's got a kid as the lead.
Yeah, but it's rubbish. You know what? You should have fucking told me this, because I could have rewatched that. I saw that at the cinema, and it wound me up no end.
Sure. I didn't watch it because I anticipated that I would feel the way that you did feel. But I do know it resonated with audiences. I know it performed really well. I know some people that do like it.
Same audiences that you just called thick shit pigs who love Transformers.
But that was in the middle of the bit where I was just talking about how much I hate myself.
Yeah. Okay. You can't pick and choose when you listen to the audience, is all.
Yes, I can.
Well,
no, I can have my cake and eat it. I can have it both ways. I have it every what way under the moon, my friend. Such is my want.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
We're not going to get out of this chat, Joe, without talking about actors. Because old Mr. Anderson, Mr. Wesley Anderson, second only to Mr. P.T. Anderson. Who are your favourite Andersons? I think P.T.'s number one.
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Anderson. Mr. Anderson.
As far as cinema goes,
oh, yeah, cinema.
Mr. Anderson is definitely
your
the best Anderson. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all the Andersons.
And then P.T., and then a big
drop.
Well,
I don't really, I don't love...
Oh, come on, There Will Be Blood is your... Oh, fuck off.
It's pretty good, but is it as good as Wes? I don't know, you know.
Fucking hell, jeez. You just could ragged on the cunt for fucking an hour.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other... Anderson Cooper?
Yeah, from Mad Men. He's good, actually. He's fucking really good.
Yeah. I was thinking of the journalist. I don't know if who Anderson. Who the? I've never seen Mad Men. John Anderson, an English and American singer, songwriter, and musician, best known as the former lead singer of the progressive rock band Yes. Could there be a better Anderson than the Anderson who had a band called Yes?
No.
No. Well, here's a film related thing about John Anderson, though. He collaborated with Vangelis.
The Nazis.
No.
If anyone says the word collaborated, that's instantly in my head.
You go straight
Nazis.
To the
Nazis. What? Yeah. Unbelievable. I can't believe the guy from Yes collaborated with the Nazis.
No, he collaborated with Vangelis, who made the
soundtrack
to Blade. Vangelis, yeah. Vangelis.
Vangelis? What?
Vangelis?
What?
I don't know how you say it.
It's Vangelis. It might be Vangelis. Yeah. But I'd say Vangelis.
I like to say Vangelis.
Vangelis.
Anyway, the Vangelis made the movie soundtrack to Blade Runner.
Hey, what do you call a preacher who loves Blade Runner? A Vangelis.
That's quite good. That's quite good.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. An evangelist. I should have said evangelist. Yeah.
Is that not what you said?
No.
Oh, I thought that's what you said.
No, I've only now figured out the joke.
For fuck's sake.
I just said evangelist.
You just said evangelist. I heard evangelist. I was like, that's actually a pretty good joke.
Yeah, no, I didn't say the good joke.
Right.
Oh, God. What a fucking shambles. We've got to talk cast. We've got to talk.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Wesley Anderson and his cast. Oh, he's known for it. He's got his little troupe. He's got his little troupe he's pulled together. Like a rolling stone, he's gathered moss. He's not supposed to gather moss, but he has. He's gathered, you know, he's started. You know, Bill Murray...
Can I just say, a weathered stone is a bit like when you stop me for saying safe haven, isn't it? Because, you know, a stone is weathered by
nature. I said
nature.
Rolling, a rolling stone. I didn't say
you
weathered.
You said a weathered stone.
Weathered.
A weathered stone.
No, mate, I'm not weathered. I'm not a fucking Scottish poet. Okay, a weathered stone gathers near moss.
Oh, no.
So yeah, old Bill Murray notoriously doesn't pick up the phone. He only accepts jobs if you can fax him. That's how Sofia Coppola got him for Lost in Translation in 2003.
Yeah.
Four years later, Wesley Anderson gets him for Rushmore, and that's it.
Right.
He's the first bit of moss on Wes Anderson. Well, he's not really. Owen Wilson's the first bit of moss.
I think Owen Wilson's. I mean, didn't Owen Wilson co-write some Tenenbaums with him.
He co-wrote Bottle Rocket. He co-wrote Rushmore.
Did he co-write Rushmore?
Yep.
Wow.
And he...
co-wrote the Royal Tenenbaums.
Tenenbaums. Yeah. I tell you what, Wilson, why did he stop writing screenplays or co-writing them? Because there is a real drop-off. There's a great Reddit thread where people were voting who's the best Wes Anderson co-screenwriter. And everyone voted for, not everyone, like 60% voted for Owen Wilson. Noah Baumbach, he co-wrote Life Aquatic and Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Right.
So a humdinger and a humnotter.
Right.
And then Roman Coppola has co-written a fair few. Jason Schwartzman chipped in for Darjeeling with, who's the other co-writer on Darjeeling? Anyway, it all starts to... Once he stops working with Owen and Noah, his films start to become a little bit shitter. Mm. Are you tapping out now?
No, I'm so sorry. I'm actually a combination of tired. Hold on. I've got 5 minutes until my COVID test, so I'm thinking about that. And all in the background, I'm on a really interesting web page called IMDb, and the thing is, it's a playlist made by Wes Anderson, made by someone. It's called Wes Anderson's Actor Troupe, and it's all the actors in his films and how many films they've been in. So, for example, Owen Wilson's been in 7.
Right, okay, that's good.
6.
Because
6.
I've got a list. Well, what I wanted to get into was you've got repeaters. I like to call repeaters the people who turn up in multiple Anderson flicks.
Yeah.
Your repeaters.
Owen Wilson. Luke Wilson. Yeah. Kumar Palana. We've got Jason Schwartzman. Bill Murray.
Just say big ones. We're just doing big names.
Okay. Bill Murray. Jason Schwartzman. The Wilson brothers. And then I guess beyond that,
you've got Willem Dafoe. Jeff Goldblum.
Willem Dafoe is in 4. That's right. Angelica Houston, I guess.
Ed Norton.
Yeah.
Bob Balaban.
Who?
Bob Balaban.
Who's Bob Balaban?
Don't worry about it. Michael Gambon.
Is he a big one? You just shouted at me for saying only the big ones, but then you're saying Bob Balaban.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Who's... Oh, Bob Balaban. I see him. Oh, that guy. Yeah, yeah. He's not that
big. Those are your big ones, you know? They keep coming back. What I'm interested in, yeah? What I'm interested in is the oneers. Yeah,
Tilda Swinton, we didn't say.
Oh, Tilda, she's a fucking repeater. I'm interested in the oneers. And no, I'm not talking about one shots. Like, Get Off Gravity, that was last week. Well, 2 weeks ago. Oneers, oneers now mean people who popped up the one Wes Anderson flick. And let
Bruce
me give
Bruce Willis.
Oh, fuck you, man. I wrote it out.
Oh, you've got them. I'm sorry. Go on. Go on. Tell me.
Olivia Williams, stunning in Rushmore. She's the woman in Rushmore. Don't ask that. You'll look like a
I didn't know. I didn't know who she was when I watched in Rushmore. So I was like, I don't think I've ever seen her in anything else.
Sorry, Sixth Sense, matey.
Is she in Sixth Sense?
Yeah, she's the wife in the Sixth Sense.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Is she actually English?
Yeah, as they come. She's an English rose.
Wow.
Jude Law.
Gene Which one's he in?
Grand Budapest Hotel, mate.
I don't recall him in that film.
No, I rewatched that, and he begins the movie.
Wow. Okay.
He's the young Tom Wilkinson. So you start on Tom Wilkinson telling the story of, like, he's written the novel, The Grand Budapest Hotel, and he's talking to the camera about his book. We've seen the book cover. We haven't touched upon this. He doesn't make movies. He makes movies about books or about plays or about plays within movies or plays within plays magazines. You know, he's not interested in movies. He doesn't care. Yeah.
No, he doesn't care.
So this is Gene Hackman, of course. Ben Stiller, Gwyneth Paltrow, who
Ben
is,
and Gwynny from the same movie, right?
Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow is phenomenal in Tenenbaums. Mm-hmm. She is iconic in that movie. She's so underrated. All right, I'm just going to go on it. Glover, again, that's Tenenbaums. No, I was going to say George Clooney, but you've just said off air that he was also the voice in The Isle of Dogs.
That's my COVID alarm.
Okay, now Joe's going to find
out if I've got COVID. Okay, I'll be back in one second. Keep it rolling. Say who else it has been just in one. Okay, I'll be back.
I'm going to say people who maybe you haven't been. Like, I was going to say Kate Blanchett, but maybe she did a voiceover. In one of the others, I haven't checked. Ralph Fiennes, he's been an Iwana. And of course, my favourite, Bruce Willis, who was in the worst Anderson, Moonrise Kingdom, without a shadow of a doubt. But he's really good in it. He's actually quite good in that. And I'm now just talking into dead air. When I don't have anyone to bounce off against... Yeah, there's talking. Yeah, no one... It's different. It's different, isn't it? Suddenly changes the tone of it. I worry that, you know, if Joe dies as he, you know, he's a poorly lad and he might do, where does that leave me? Bill Burr, stand-up comedian, who I don't really like anymore, but I did. He does a podcast and it's just him. It's he just kind of goes, you know, he starts the show and he just starts talking about the stuff he's read. And I guess maybe because he's a stand-up comedian, he can get away with it. Oh, sorry, I was just talking. You can, when you listen back to it, you can find out what I said. It wasn't good.
Great. I've got COVID.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
Should we play the box office game?
I'd love to play the box office game. Absolutely. Now, this is quite a tricky one, I think. It's mid, and in more than one meaning of the word.
Oh, it's very mid, actually. Yeah, what is Anderson making? Like, he's...
The Gen Zers all know what I mean by that. Now, please, for the movie Darjeeling Limited. Brackets estimated, according to IMDb. It is mid, so it's a bit trickier, but...
Well, it stars. People might be working for scale because of it's Anderson. But, you know, they're shooting on location.
Yeah.
Sets. This guy needs sets aplenty.
I mean, there's a train that has to stop and start a lot. It is a real train.
I'd say 25.
The one they're jumping onto, I mean.
The set isn't. The set of the train is a set.
Yeah. Now, I heard, I think I know where you're about to go.
20.
Little shrewd. What about if you were Wes and you really wanted to achieve art, but you didn't quite have the...
So you're trying to get me to hedge and go lower. Do you know what? You're right, because he would have got given more money for aquatic and that didn't do well, I don't think. And so he's probably made this cheaper. Yeah. Okay, great. So everyone, just so in terms of just, I want to be honest with everyone. I was going to say 25. Uh-huh, and I don't like it when Joe steers me. He's steering me.
Just a little bit of backseat steering.
I'll say 15.
Yeah, pretty much on the money. It's $16 million estimated.
I tell you what, I don't care what you say about Wes Anderson these days. You know, to make
those
that,
days,
those days, these days, to make that flick for $16 million, hats off,
yeah,
fair play.
Sure.
It's all on screen.
Yeah.
That's indie movie. That's like a fucking, that's craft, man.
He can make it spread for sure. Wes can spread it.
Wes absolutely can spread, man. He can spread it.
He can spread. He often does. He often does. Now, can the audience spread for Wes? That's the real question here. Opening weekend US and Canada, September 30th, 2007. Does this get bums on seats, Adam Richmond?
I think it does. I don't think there's any awards. This doesn't get any awards edge to it. And that's probably the only thing that's going to kind of level it off. But it's got stars. It's whimsical. It appears whimsical, even though it isn't. And it looks great. Right, so this is going to be... This is going to make...
I'm not going to do any steering here, by the way, just to let
you know. No, I don't want any steering. No steering. So, blah, 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 blah. America, America, America. Opening weekend. Does it make... No. 1.2 million.
Unfortunately, that's some distance away.
Is it right 50,000?
It's $134,000.
Oof, that's by a factor of... Tell me what the factor of fuck that is.
Well, the factor of fuck, according to what you said, is just about... It's about a factor of 9 lower, I would say. It's pretty bad on both counts, your guess and the film.
No, it depends. Like, it might have just said of slow...
It's true. Does it burn along? How much do they spend marketing a movie like this?
This just maybe opens in 10 theaters in LA and
maybe
10 theaters in New York. Actually, that's quite a good opening, you know?
Gross worldwide, now we're on to.
It's making its money back. Anderson fans spanned.
Spanderson fans.
Spanderson fans spanned territories. We're all going to go to see this. We're all turning up. Just for memories
of... opening weekend. The Anderson fans are full of people who are busy on September the 30th, but...
Well, no, in America, but I think Anderson actually appeals more to the European cinema goer.
Because
he's very much informed by European cinema, the French New Wave, etc.
Yes.
So...
Richard Iwadi described him as one of the greatest living directors.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we'd get through this episode without talking about Richard Iwadi.
I just wondered, because you were so thoughtful and considerate when you were talking about Wes Anderson, if it had given you pause to think about your attitude towards Richard Iwadi, but clearly that's jammed in there.
It's a slight problem, because when I think of who Anderson has influenced... Anderson's influence is Richard Iwadi and Taika Waititi, two of my most loathed of people.
There you go. See, this is a bit mean, isn't it? Because it's like you've said, oh, I've stopped eating chocolate or something, and I've gone, well done, and then I've waved a big Mars bar in your face, and I've gone, what about this one though? Do you like this one? Do you want me? And I just start putting it in your mouth a little bit and pushing it further into your mouth. You know, that's the same as dangling Iwadi for you.
Yeah, I mean, Iwadi, he's a very funny guy, but his films, and Submarine, actually, do you know what? I quite like Submarine.
You did like it, yeah, you did like it.
Yeah, and then
that's one of the funny things about your hatred of Iwadi, is that you actually liked the film.
I liked it. And I just don't like the fact that he's in HSBC adverts.
Yeah.
Taika Waititi, I find insufferable. And believe everyone loves him, and I can't wait for him to be cancelled.
Oh, absolutely. Now, can you guess the gross worldwide, though, of this here movie? Budget 16 mil, opening weekend 134.
It's going to wash its face, marketing, etc. Let's say it makes 30 mil.
Yeah, pretty good. Just outside the 10% allotment there, but 35 mil it makes. So I think that's a face washing, right? They're probably not spending another $16 million on marketing this film. Are they?
No, it always depends. Sometimes it's half, sometimes it's the same. You know, in this case, it's a small indie flick. Tuppence.
Yeah,
tuppence. Mac 5, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Send out Owen on the circuit to chat about, I'm also in this new movie that I'm on a train with,
It's about spirituality and...
He'll pop up on Graham Norton. That's free advertising.
Yeah, that's what that is.
And that's called talking about your movie. And that's called let's go and see that movie. So... Is it time to do the one of us is gonna well, it's time for the game. One of us is gonna read out a list of movies they forgot to try and catch out the other one.
I'd love to play that game with you.
Joe got... Yeah, no. I was going to fucking say that. I was just going to fucking say that. And, it's my turn.
Backseat steering. I've got COVID.
Okay, here we go. Let's do this. It's my turn. There's no theme for this one.
Okay.
Jurassic World.
I'd really love to do a Jurassic at some point. But it's not going to be that one. Partly because I recently watched all of the newer Jurassics. And, they're kind of stupid. But also because I really want you to get me on Lost World. Because I haven't seen that, which isn't the second one. I haven't seen that for a really long time. And I think that's the true acceptable. Not forgot you forgot it existed, but forgot you forgot these people were in it and this happened. And it's got Vince Vaughn in it, for crying out loud. So I would add that to your list to come back to at some point, but not Jurassic World.
Would we not do Jurassic Park 2 and 3 together?
We could do, but there's an entire separation in terms of the story, the themes, the characters. Like, they're not like, it's not a trilogy.
But 3's the forgettable one, right?
I don't think so, because it's got William H. Macy in it, and it goes back to having Alan, you know, Alan Grant. Whereas 2, I feel like, just slips in there randomly in between those two. 3 was kind of shit, and they had a... Yeah, 2's got Goblin, but like, who remembers that Vince Vaughn was in it? Do you remember that Julianne Moore is in it?
Yeah, I think I remember all of those things, and that's why I'd never be able to...
Well, in which case, stepping back from this argument, I'll just say no to Jurassic World.
Okay. Heavens to Betsy. Okay, I just want to plumb you now. I just want to plumb you. Mm-hmm. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
It's a safety plumb. Okay, as long as everyone knows it's a safety plumb. You've plumbed me prior with this, and we decided because it was you were fortunate enough that day to double plumb, we picked a different film. So no new round of applause for you. Just you have to deal with remembering the one you got several weeks ago. But I accept that. I do accept
that. But double plumb applause is... That's faded. I want fresh. That's fresh plum, you know. I want thumbs up from Whacking Phoenix, mate. Come on.
You can't have any. No, you had it. You had it already. You've had all your plum. You finished your dinner. You're not getting any more. But we will watch that film.
If you behave like that, I'm not going to let... If you behave like that, I'm not going to let you... If I plum you, I'm not going to read out any more of my films.
That is quite a good threat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So pay the plum, pay the piper.
Pay the plumper, did you say?
Play the, no. Pay it's the amazing. Plumper. I'd the like the fact plumper. That you kept mishearing me, and it worked really well when you thought I said something and did an amazing joke.
Yeah.
It doesn't...
Not when you say pay the plumper.
Pay the plumper. I didn't say pay the plumper. I'm not fucking Eddie Murphy.
I'm plumping the pillows. I'm plumping the pillows for the plumper. Yeah? Happy? Happy?
Yeah. Okay. Next week we're doing Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Big movie. Big movie.
Plum, man. It's been many years. I would say it's been probably not far off 15 years since I watched that.
I only saw it when it came out, and I never rewatched it.
Yeah.
Love martial arts.
Exciting. It's exciting. It's exciting.
It should be.
No one's going to want to watch that one because of subtitles.
Oh, come on. Everyone loves subtitles now.
Everyone Gen loves X, subtitles, man. Once they've got them on.
But these days, that's how they all watch movies. They just bang them on because they're on their phones.
Yeah.
And the for some reason, they can't hear dialogue anymore.
Yeah. I think those people are really going to want to listen to an hour and a half long podcast.
I don't think we've got those kinds of listeners.
No, sadly. Our youngest listener is 31, I think.
I know some young people. They listen to this podcast.
You don't know any young people. You're really old. Young to you is like 35, isn't it?
Yeah, that is pretty young.
Yeah.
That's when I had kids, and so that's when I relate to when I was last young and had freedom.
Is it? Is that how old you were when you had kids?
Yeah.
Oh. That's how old my dad was when he had his first kid.
I thought you were going to say that's how old my dad was when he died. No. And then I was going to, oh man, come on, cheer yourself up, you got COVID. Stop talking about your dad. No. Okay, was, well, how, that's 52. How your dad was when he was
52. When he had a kid.
So you're basically my kid.
yeah, basically. And how old are you? 43.
So I'm going to die
in 9 years left. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Oh, man. If you get a bad headache in the back of the head, just try to get as close to an A&E as possible, but it probably won't matter, to be honest.
I'm going down.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll turn the machine off, don't worry.
Please, hopefully it doesn't come to that. I just can, you know, just get wiped out.
They don't let you go these days, you know, unless you're already completely cold. So, but I've got COVID, so, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the Darjeeling Limited episode. Sorry Joe got COVID halfway through. That was pretty exciting, wasn't it?
The energy fell off a cliff after I got COVID.
What episode of a podcast has the co-host ever got COVID in?
I started without a gall, and by the halfway through I had COVID.
He started out with a soft bottom, a tender bum, and then he found out he had COVID. You heard it in real time. Hopefully you'll forgive him for it. I know I was raring to go. Two cans, kept to my limit.
You held up your end of the bargain. My only end of the bargain is to be healthy.
Yeah, just be healthy. Don't be a poorly little sickly twat. Guess what? He's fucked it. He's fucked it. Do see you bye. Say bye, Joe. No, wait. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.